Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis. And back in 79, this was the beginning of a couple of pretty exciting days, wasn't it, Anna?
For sure, Bob. You'll probably remember this. I was very little at the time, but Pope John Paul II visited Chicago 1979 this week, and the Chicago area was just in awe. This was such a big deal for the city. Chicago was home to the largest concentration of Catholics in the United States, the largest Polish population, second only to Warsaw. And the Pope, being both Polish and Catholic, was warmly received, but not just by the Poles or Catholics. Literally everyone across the city came out. This was a momentous day for, or momentous couple of days, as you point out, Bob, for the city. Passionate followers came out. And Pope John Paul was the first pope to ever visit the city of Chicago, only the second pope to make it to the United States for an official visit. And people were let out of work for this event. Like, the employers let employees say, hey, go, you know, line the route and be part of this big day for the city. Chicago Public Schools actually closed schools for that day. And so did a lot of schools across the metro area, because kids wanted to be part of it. Parents wanted to be part of it. And they lined the streets as the Pope was in an open convertible and made his way, blessing the crowds, made his way eventually to Grant Park, where over a million people had made it to the downtown area for this mass. We pulled a clip from that mass, again, attended from people of all, by people of all faiths, all backgrounds, and the Pope spoke of unity.
I see also the whole people of America, one nation formed of many people, a pluribus unum. In the first two centuries of your history, as a nation, you have traveled from sea to shining sea to find your identity, to discover each other along the way, and to find your own place in this immense country.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. Even Pavarotti was in town, wasn't he?
Can you imagine? He goes, he makes his way to Holy Name Cathedral, and Luciano Pavarotti performed Ave Maria with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Quite a time for Chicago and Chicagoans. Pretty
1979. Cool. Now, 30 years ago, we got an announcement from Michael Jordan that was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
Who would forget this, Bob? The day Michael Jordan shocked the world, and not in a good way, like he had done so many times. You know, this was Jordan announcing his retirement from basketball, October 6th, 1993. A lot of sadness across the city, a lot of mixed emotions, certainly a lot of shock about this announcement. We now know, of course, wasn't his final decision, but at the time, it certainly felt final, I think, for most people. You know, he said he wasn't taking a break. That's not what this was. It was a retirement. Hard to, you know, crawl into Jordan's head and figure out what, you know, exactly all of the factors that went into it, but he did cite the tragic death of his father. His father had been tragically killed after a carjacking just 3 months before. They were very close. But Jordan also said he didn't have anything left to prove. And so in the prime of his career, prime of his life, fresh off his third NBA championship with the Bulls, Jordan told shocked reporters at the Bulls practice facility in Deerfield that he was hanging it up and retiring.
I'm very solid with my decision of not to play the game of basketball in the NBA. Reason being, I've heard a lot of different speculations about my reasons for not playing. But I've always stressed to people that have known me and the media that has followed me that when I lose the sense of motivation and the sense of to prove something as a basketball player, it's time for me to move away from the game of basketball. It's not because I don't love the game. I love the game of basketball. I always will. I just feel that at this particular time in my career, I've reached the pinnacle of my career. I've achieved a lot in that short amount of time, if you want to call it short. But I just feel that I don't have anything else for myself to prove.
Man, 2 years later, he proved he could play baseball.
Yeah, right. He was playing baseball, and then and thankfully he did come back to the NBA because, wow, did you know, so many more happy memories for all of us as Bulls fans. So, but really kind of wild to, you know, think back to that moment, Bob, you know, when he's retiring and how we all felt about it. pretty
crazy.
And
then 1998, he had another announcement, didn't he?
Fast forward 5 years, Bob, end of September 1998, after trying out baseball, as you remember well, and returning to the game of basketball, Michael Jordan stepped back onto the baseball diamond once again, this time on the north side. You'll remember this one, Bob. He's throwing out the ceremonial first pitch at the Cubs game. He just, the Cubs were in a one-game playoff against the Giants at Wrigley, trying to clinch the wild card spot in their first playoff appearance since 1989. And big game, of course, and the Cubs wanted to bring out the big guns. No one captured the winning spirit of Chicago quite like Michael Jordan. So, now fresh off his sixth NBA championship win, MJ put on a Sosa jersey, Sammy Sosa jersey. He took to the mound, and we pulled a clip from that moment in Cubs and Michael Jordan history.
Wrigley Field, Chicago, and as we told you, the place has been rocking already, and here comes the great Chicago hero who's won many a championship and big game, Michael Jordan, to throw out the ceremonial first ball.
Well, John, no wonder I couldn't get him on the phone. I've been trying to reach him. He's here at the stadium.
And he's got a Sammy Sosa jersey on. Michael and Sosa, two of the biggest sports icons, not just in Chicago, but in the country and the world right now. And as has been customary in every game Sosa plays, as well as Mark McGwire, the flashbulbs go off. So they have evoked the spirit of Michael Jordan, who I guess is the definition of the big game player. And the Cubs are looking for a few big game players for this one tonight.
John Miller and Joe Morgan on ESPN. Mm-hmm. This week in Chicago history, it was 1969, and they were known as the Chicago Transit Authority, and this was the beginning for them, wasn't it, Anna?
That song, Beginnings, was released, Bob, and you'll remember this well. Chicago Transit Authority was what they were originally called before shortening their name to the band Chicago. That song has survived the generations, and I think even a lot of younger people know it, but when it first was released, it was a total flop. It didn't chart. It kind of went nowhere. It was the band's second single, and it would be resurrected later on another album 2 years later. And then Beginnings became a radio hit, rising to number 7 on the Billboard 100. Founding member Robert Lamb said he wrote the song in 2 days on a 12-string guitar with two broken strings. So I don't know how that worked out. I don't know. He said it was two broken E strings. If music people, aficionados will know if there's an E in there. I don't know, but he wrote it that way. And look at that. People still know the song today and play it. Born in Brooklyn, moved to Chicago when he was a teen. He was a Roosevelt University student, but he met up with the rest of the band who were almost entirely DePaul University students. Mm-hmm. But they all loved music, and they made beautiful music together, really successful music too, going on to sell more than 100 million records.
Yeah, and still at it with three, I think, founding members still with them. Yeah. I forgot about that song being a flop at first. Let's go back to 1975, and this was the week that Walter Payton made his debut.
Yeah, I went back and looked at the old tape from this time, and just amazing to see Walter Payton, 1975, playing his first game with the Chicago Bears. Team selected him fourth pick in the 75 draft. And though Payton came to embody greatness, it didn't start out great for Walter Payton. He missed most of training camp. He had an infection in his pro debut. His very first game, he gained exactly 0 yards on 8 carries. That's not the Payton we knew. But, again, he wasn't feeling so well. He was dealing with some health issues and ended up missing the only game ever in his career that rookie season as well. But that was the Walter Payton of the rookie season, and then quickly turned it around to become the great that we all know and loved. That very next season, he was selected to the Pro Bowl, first of 9 appearances. He became the youngest player ever to win the NFL's MVP award shortly after that, be named NFL Man of the Year, and it goes on and on and on. The records he set, the way he went on to dominate that position in the sport and brought the Bears to the Super Bowl, led them there. Just the Hall of Famer, one of the greatest of all time, of course, dedicated to the sport, dedicated to the city as well, and the epitome of class, which is why the NFL Man of the Year Award bears his name, and we always see Jarrett Payton and Brittany Payton as kids present that honor in honor of their father at the Super Bowl time of year. Sadly, Walter gone before his time, just leaving us at 45 years old, but definitely made his mark on the city, Bob, and made his mark on the sport. Will not be forgotten, for sure.
And away from the field, Mr. Prankster, always laughing and yucking it up.
Did you interact with him a lot, Bob? Did you have an
couple of times. He was a lot of fun. A great man. Good old number 34. Finally, I love it when you tell us about the history of inventions that were developed right here in Chicago.
I told my husband this. Like, I said, the zipper. Did you know it was invented in Chicago? He said, no, come on. You're making that up. I'm like, no. I do research these things. And it was. It was a Chicago invention, 1893. Whitcomb L. Judson, Bob, was his name. We should be thankful of him. Patented his original design, which the zipper is zipped material together. It was called a clasp locker and then a hookless fastener, but eventually became named the zipper. Do you remember the name, the word onomatopoeia in fifth grade? Did
yes.
you learn that?
Uh-huh.
When it sounds like what it is? Well, that's the zipper. It was just very simply zipped things together, and it was called the zipper, and there you go. Judson built a zipper manufacturing plant in Chicago back in the day, but it debuted at the World's Fair, and originally it wasn't selling so well because he'd used it to apply to shoes and tobacco bags, and people was like, nah, I don't really need that. Then the next iteration was applying it to clothing, and that's when the zipper took off.
Do we know how he demonstrated it at the fair? Conjures up a lot of images in my head.
They weren't on jeans yet or anything. You know, they didn't have that whole thing going yet.
Okay.
But just zipping it together. And then I wonder if they still got their fingers stuck in it back then, too. Because you remember, they were like steel or metal back then, kind of sharp.
Anna DeVlantis, This Week in Chicago History. More next Wednesday. Thanks, Anna.
Talk to you then, Bob.